Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
After being isolated in our homes for long periods of time, it's easy to feel less at home than ever. This is the podcast where I, Sandra Andres, and Laura Bach invite fellow artists, normbreakers, researchers, scientists, and spiritual leaders to share vulnerable stories and profound insights about how we all can feel more at home with ourselves.
Together with our guests, we will examine how to break the behavioral patterns that make us feel stuck and explore how to live a more joyful, connected, and sustainable life from the inside and out.
Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis or a challenge that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves.
We are so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to Coming Home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Hi, Laura.
Hello, people. Hi, Sandra.
The theme of this episode is actually very much the same as the title of this show. And while working on this episode, it made me think of the great researcher Brené Brown's words. And they're from her book, Rising Strong. And I'd just like to start by sharing those with all of you. Is that all right?
Yes, absolutely. Go, go.
Here it goes. Our identities are always changing and growing. They are not meant to be pinned down. Our histories are never all good and all bad. And running from the past is the surest way to be defined by it. That's when it owns us. The key is bringing light to the darkness, developing awareness and understanding.
Wow. Running from the past is the surest way to be defined by it. That's like, how on point can you be, Brené?
Yeah,
honestly,
right?
Yeah.
It's just perfect. And I thought it was the perfect door opener to today's episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are joined by the talented and internationally renowned Swedish artist and actor, Mr. Peter Jöback. And we will talk about exactly this. How running from your past is a sure way of being defined by it. But how the awareness... And there is that word again, can bring about understanding and forgiveness, and how to take empowering responsibility for yourself and others.
Yeah, so true. And Peter also generously opens up about the astonishing life he's had and how he overcame both abuse and addiction and came to terms with some deep family secrets.
Yeah, I love how he says, you're only as sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
That rings so true for me, who spent much of my life trying to hide my impediment and what I thought were my shortcomings. And it came from a culture of not talking about the pink elephants in the room, you know, or calling things for what they are, but instead sweeping what is labeled as maybe shameful or uncomfortable under the rug. A tactic that I think is very common and that we don't talk about nearly enough.
Yeah, but we will in this episode.
We will indeed. So let's start by introducing our wonderful guest.
Yes, let's do that. Okay. Swedish singer and actor Peter Jöback has been one of Sweden's and the whole of Scandinavia's most groundbreaking and beloved artists for decades. And he is the most successful Swede ever on the international musical theatre scene. Peter started singing and working in theatre when he was only a young kid, and he hasn't stopped since.
His big breakthrough came when he worked with ABBA's Björn Ulvaeus and Benny Andersson and originated the role of Robert in the hit musical Christina from Duvemåla, also known in English as The Emigrants. The theme song, which was sung by Peter, broke every record in Sweden, and Peter won his first Golden Mask Award for the role. And from there, it just took off.
The legendary musical producer Sir Cameron McIntosh discovered Peter's talent and cast him as the lead in Miss Saigon at the West End in London. There, 3 years later, Peter also created the role of Michael in McIntosh's original production of The Witches of Eastwick. And he was also cast as the Phantom of the Opera, first in London's West End and then twice on Broadway, where he was picked by no other than Andrew Lloyd Webber and Hal Prince themselves to be the 30th anniversary Phantom. Besides Peter's many musical theatre achievements, he has produced TV shows and released 17 albums, which has topped the Swedish charts numerous times. He has lived in New York and also worked with international stars such as Sia, Kate Pearson, from the B-52s and Norway's Sissel Kyrkjebø, among many others.
A couple of years back, he created an award-winning movie based on events in his own life. And just last year, he released his autobiographical book called To Carry Oneself. Peter Jöback is one of those rare people who continues to cross boundaries and defy norms as an artist and human being. I have read his book, and I can tell you that, as awe-inspiring as Peter's career is, his personal journey is even more amazing and inspiring. Talk about coming home. Peter embodies it.
And on this show, for the first time ever, Peter's international fans and people who don't speak Swedish will get the chance to hear about what he has overcome to be where he is today. We are thrilled that Peter is here to share his incredible, vulnerable, and empowering story with us and you, our listeners. And please be aware that there is mention of sexual abuse in this episode.
Welcome, 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 Peter.
Thank you.
We're so happy and honored to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. I'm excited.
Oh, good. I am as well.
I'm excited to see Laura because it's over 15 years since
it's
I saw you.
It's more than that, yeah. Unfortunately. It's about 20, but it's
sleep. Oh my God. But you look the same.
You both look the same. That's
no,
what
we
I'm
saying. We did cabaret together. I was playing the MC. They called me like, I had 10 days to rehearse the role because the guy who played the MC had just got a film role. And yeah. They needed someone to take over. And they asked me. And I was crazy and brave enough to say yes.
Oh, and you did such an amazing job, you. I have to say.
That was quite good, actually. I was happy because that was the first role for me that I could play all those dark sides of me. Because I always play the first lover or the sweet boy, whatever. And suddenly I could play this more vulgar, interesting
vulgar
character.
Vulgar and very sophisticated.
I was such a good production because it was dirty. You know, it was really raw.
It weren't pretty.
It was very
no.
Danish.
Yeah, but, it was very but Danish.
It was, no, but it was, for me, you know.
I love
thanks,
that.
Peter.
No, I really liked it. And I remember, can I just say, when we rehearsed, because I was so nervous. I only had 10 days. And the way the Danish people rehearse is like, you rehearse for 10 minutes and they go, no, we're going to have a glass of wine or whatever and smoke. And then they smoke. And then I was like, we have to rehearse. I don't know the lyrics yet.
Yeah,
and rehearse for 10 more minutes. And then, we're going to have a drink. We're going to
have a coffee now. We got the beer. Have a smoke.
So,
that's
a good memory for me. I learned a lot from that experience.
That's the thing. So you two did meet just a little while ago. But we have never met, Peter. Which is so strange in a way. And that's what I was going to say, that I have read the book.
Yeah.
And I was completely gobsmacked by how much you have done. Like, your body of work is incredible. And the thing is, I mean, as a Swede, of course, I know of you because you've been on stage for such a long time. I've seen you on stage. I think it was Fame I saw you first time.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, I've heard your beautiful voice so many times. But I didn't know that we had so many like common denominators. So I got so excited when I read the book because I was like, what? You grew up and you have family in Värmland.
Yes.
The same as me.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and grew up with a lot of the same music.
Yes.
That just really shaped you or like has affected you throughout your life. Yeah. And then also that we've both lived in New York.
Yes.
And I was doing musical theater there for so many years, but I was like off Broadway and off Broadway.
Okay.
And you were like on Broadway in the major league there, which is amazing.
When I was 10 years old, I did my first job in Sweden. I was playing Kurt von Trapp in Sound of Music. And that was my first job, and it was like coming home for me, coming to the theater. And this theater, we had this woman who was playing the Mother Superior, and her name was Ulla Sallet. And when I was 10, I sat in her dressing room every night, and she told me this story about this place on the other side of the Atlantic Sea, about this place with the neon lights and called Broadway. And I was looking at her, and I was thinking to myself, if that lady can do it, I can do it. So that's how it started. And then I've been working so hard to get there. And then, you know, when my book is about coming home, you know, finding myself.
In your book, you just switch back and forth between being like fun and entertaining and very vulnerable. And it's gut-wrenching at times. And it's kind of flows like life itself flows.
Yeah.
And that to me was so inspiring. And I'm just so excited that we will get into your story now.
I just really wanted to tell that because I think, you know, everything you go through from when you're a kid leads you to the next stage in life. And things that happened to me as a child made me choose paths in my life because I was abused and I grew up with an alcoholic father. And so it affected me because we never talked about it in my family. The book is a lot about secrets. Because secrets are dangerous. You are only as sick as your secrets. That's what I've learned.
It's like a parasite.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. The book and your story, first of all, being so brave and telling it, because by doing so, you help so many others. We do have so much to talk about, right? And your book is not available in English yet. So we are so happy and honored to be able to hold space for your story here today. And hopefully you can inspire more people. And you surely will. So let's listen to the first story. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
London. It's springtime 2006 and the second week of therapy. Same group and rehab center, but a new addiction therapist. The therapist is talking.
Today, I would like for all of you to visit the garden and pick something out.
He looks around to see if the others are understanding what the therapist is getting at. They all seem to understand, or they are simply following orders, because they're standing up and exiting to the garden one by one. Okay. He feels compelled to do the same. For the first time since he arrived, he takes in the park-like garden that surrounds this place. In the grass, just below his feet, he lays his eyes on a few white flowers. He picks one up, mission completed, and returns to the room. Some time passes, and finally, when everyone's back, the therapist addresses everyone.
Okay, what do you have in your hands?
This is ridiculous. I'm 35 years old. Do I have to sit here and answer this? He makes an effort to control his agitation, but when it is his turn to answer, he finds himself blurting out, "It's a fucking flower." Without flinching, the therapist looks back at him and continues.
What did you do as a kid when your mom and dad were fighting?
Now he takes a deep breath before he answers. I went to my room and sang and acted out stories by myself. The therapist is nodding.
Okay, what's your line of work today?
I work with music and theater, he says. A moment of silence, as the therapist takes in his response and then calmly says,
"You do realize that you're stuck in an escape pattern as a way of coping. It's your coping mechanism."
For a moment, he just stares back at the therapist. It's like he has been sucked into a vacuum, and then, incapable of stopping himself, he jumps out of his seat and screams, "I hate you, you fuckers!" As he runs out into the garden, it hits him that he has no idea where in London he is. He decides he doesn't care and keeps running down the street until he realizes another thing. He doesn't have his wallet or his cell phone or any of the things that he needs to get out of here. He had to hand it all over when he was admitted on the first day. A successful escape seems futile. So, half an hour later, he's back in the circle. The same group therapy session.
"So you mean that my whole life is about escaping?"
The therapist responds,
"You're in the entertainment business because you're talented. But it's just that you have to reconcile with your past, with your own story. You need to practice letting go and focus on what you truly desire instead of doing what you do to numb yourself and escape."
Wow.
That was me. But it was so interesting when they said that, you know, what did you do when you were a kid? Like singing, and my mom was a singer, so of course I got it from her. But still, when they're saying, like, what are you doing today to survive? I'm singing and acting. So that's what I'm doing, it because I'm escaping from something. You know, my problem was that I had like a list that I was trying to tick off things. To go to Broadway, to do that, to do my albums. That's why I got so far so quickly, because I was just, I'm going to show those motherfuckers my father. I'm going to show those abusers. I'm going to be the biggest star on earth. I'm going to have an Oscar. Mm. It's funny when I got married, because my husband is Oscar. So I said, I didn't get that Oscar, but I got an Oscar.
I got an Oscar.
It's a much better Oscar. Yeah, it's much better.
We could not have done this podcast without the support from the absolutely frickadicky amazing Tweak Sweets.
And we can highly recommend visiting their website at tweaksweets.com and checking out their 95% less sugary sweets. All natural flavors, high in fibers, and with 50% less calories as well.
I didn't realize that I had a bad pattern in my life because I was just doing it. And I remember the first time I got, maybe there's something wrong with me, was when I was 30 years old and I was sitting in my dressing room after the world premiere of Witches of Eastwick, which was in London. And just after the opening night, and there was champagne and flowers, just like a Woody Allen movie. And I was sitting there looking at myself in the mirror going, what am I going to do next? You know, I was not celebrating. Oh, I was like, what am I going to do next?
No.
And I was thinking, and I go, I have to go to Broadway. And I was like, no, fuck. Ulla Salet has been there before me. I have to go somewhere where people hasn't been before. I have to be first. And then I just looked in the mirror and I like, yes, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the first person to have a show on the moon. And, you know, and,
wow.
And
really?
Yeah, and for real, I was like, yes, because soon there were going to be ferries to the moon and they're going to build a theater there. And then I remember I caught myself in the mirror, my eyes, and go, this is not right. You know, something is wrong with you. And that was the first time. But then it took me 5 years because I started to party when I was after 30. I got together with a model and he introduced me to another life. So for me, when I started to party, I started to live. It, but not in the right way. But I was at least I was like, oh my God. And also because my other problem was my sexuality and the abuse, because I was so not comfortable with my body. I've always been attracted to men and women, but there was something with men that I knew I was interested in. But because I was a part of the abuse when I was a kid, I didn't feel comfortable with my body with a man. It was always about sex. It was always, it was not love. So that was the another thing that I was fighting with. And because when I started to party, everything was easier because the door was wide open. So that's when I got into trouble with that. That's why I ended up in the rehab. When I got into rehab when I was 35, I was sitting in this circle and I saw all these people with bad addictions. I was like, this is not me. Why am I here? And then when the stories started, the people told their stories, I was like, I'm here because that could be me in 10 years. You know, so I was like so that. Lucky. And the reason I got into rehab was because my manager that I've been together with for 25 years, she called me and said, I heard that you bought drugs somewhere. And I said, are you crazy, you motherfucker? Well, I was angry. And then we talked for 5 minutes. And then I was like, this is my way out. I have a chance now. So I said, yes, it's true. Can you help me? So an advice I always give to people is like, ask for help.
And take help when it's offered. Because it's also that taking that
and
hand
she was,
that is
she
reaching
was amazing.
Out.
She was amazing. Her and her best friend helped me finding somewhere where I could go. So after 3 weeks, I was on the plane to London.
Wow. But it's also about being aware that you need the help, right? So it sounds like you've been on a journey of aha moments, and then all of a sudden it's too much. The crisis kicks in and then you need help.
That's why I like your title, Coming Home, because I had been waiting to come home for so many years. I moved from home when I was 14. I was kicked out from home. And my father died when I was 22. We didn't have that great connection. And I'd carried myself since I was a kid. I started partying and all that because I couldn't cope anymore. I just wanted to disappear. And I think it was actually a cry for help.
Your book is called To Carry Oneself, which is such a beautiful title. And I could really relate to that because I had to take care of myself a lot from early on. And what happens then is that you develop these survival mechanisms and a way of operating in the world.
Yes.
Which brings us to the second story. I think we should listen to that.
Ah, now he gets it. It took several weeks, but he is finally fully grasping what the therapist was getting at. The symbolism of the flower. Now he actually feels the truth of it in his bones. The flower is a symbol of life. It's part of an ecosystem, just like everyone in that circle, in that room, on that day. It all dawns on him, the full picture. He connects the dots and thinks to himself, it is a system that I haven't been a part of. I have been circling around in my own orbit because I have only trusted myself. My whole life has been about climbing up the ladder, desperately clinging on to it. I needed to be focused, to not get distracted. It was all about me. People were shouting, come and play with us. But my drive was too strong and my self-esteem too low to believe what they were saying. He keeps on reflecting in silence. He sees it. Ever since he moved away from home at the age of 15, he has had to take care of himself. So he withdrew and pushed himself to move forward. He needed to go somewhere else, and he knew where. Up there, only a few more steps up the ladder. Up there, it will be better. Compulsively, with an increasing tunnel vision, he kept on climbing, trying to get away from the shame that just weighed heavier and heavier on his shoulders. He speeded up in order to not fall, scared to death of failing, to ask for help, to listen to others, to care about anyone else but himself and his career. As he is thinking these thoughts, it all becomes so clear. To my old self, a flower was just a fucking flower, and it had nothing to do with me. I see it now. I actually see it.
These moments, like pure revelation, it's so magical.
It was so amazing. I think it was the second week when we had this art therapy when I was picking the flower. I thought it was so silly when they asked me, what do you have in your hand, Peter? My fucking flower, what are you talking about?
Fucking flower, man.
And then it took me, like, because I was there 6 weeks. And I think on the fourth or fifth week, my God, I know what it is. So I was running, looking for him. Hello, where are you? I was like, I saw life. It had gone so far for me that I was not connected to life. I was just trying to survive. And all of us had that trauma from childhood of abuse. I always thought it was my fault. The first week I did my life story, it took me a week to write it down. But I was like, I paid so much money, so I have to do it. And then I read it when I was 5, blah, 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 all that. And then when I was done, they said, can you talk about what happened there when you were 13, 14 in the dressing room with the man? This man came into my dressing room. He's a famous opera singer. I was in my teens. I was the only child. And we were two, one boy and one girl at the theater. So we were left alone, you know, behind stage. So he came up to me. I couldn't get out. He was standing in the doorway and he took his trousers off and said, do you want to play with me? And I couldn't get out, but I was also
curious. Yeah.
So I did what he wanted me to do. And when he was done, he told me I was good. And he said I was beautiful. And I was a fat boy. You know, I was round. Yeah. So I always felt not beautiful. So he said I was beautiful. And he said I was good. And then the therapist asked me, what did you say to him then? And this was hard. So I said, I can do it again if you want to. And then, oh, this is always hard to talk about.
Yeah.
And then he said, why do you think you said that? This is when they broke through. And then I said, because I wanted him to like me. I always thought that I was just a horny 13-year-old boy. Till I was 35. And they told me, you were a child. You are a child till you're 18 years old. And this is not supposed to happen. And until you're 18 years old, your mother and father have responsibility to you. That was the second when the floor just disappeared, because my mom and dad left me when I was 15 years old.
And then
that's why you sit here now, Peter.
Yeah.
Because no one have taken care of you. And you felt guilt and you
everything. Internalized and, everything.
But I'm not alone with this. No. This is so common. That's why I want to talk about it. And especially for boys as well, you know. There's so many boys who don't talk about these things. It's not okay for an older man or woman to do this with a kid, you know, even if it's 13, 14.
It is abuse.
Yes, it's abuse.
Yeah.
And they had to go into my head like every day, you were abused.
Yeah.
And it was hard to embrace that, but it's the best thing I've ever done to heal.
Yeah.
To say, I was abused. But I'm not the abused child anymore. This doesn't define me.
Yeah.
But it's part of me. And I've learned from it.
And as long as you don't integrate it or heal from it, it will own you.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thing that happened to me when I was there. Yeah, I was someone who'd been exposed for abuse.
Yeah.
But I wasn't that anymore. They helped me and that released me. And I was sad because I never told my parents because I didn't want to bothered them more than they had so many problems with my father drinking. How can a kid think that? The thing is, I've talked to some like athletes who won Olympic medals and stuff like that. And they said, do you think I would have got so far if I didn't have a shitty childhood? Because that made me fight harder.
Yeah.
So it's in a way, it got me far, but I was never satisfied. I could never enjoy it. I could never enjoy my success. Because I was still waiting for my father to say, I like you, Peter. You're so good. But he was not there.
I'm proud
of you. My mom had Alzheimer's, got that diagnosed really early. So I lost her early. And so I was waiting. And then what was so interesting with rehab, they're so fucking talented, those people. I love these people who work with this because my whole life changed. And they said to me, but you're 35, you can decide yourself how you want to live your life.
That is so important what you're saying right there.
We kind of get lost if we don't do this introspection and find our way home.
Yes, because I had met Oscar. We met a couple of years before I went to rehab. And when I met him, I was like, I want to have kids with him because he's such a lovely man. Oh, he's the sweetest person on earth. And this is the person I want to have kids with. And I said to him, I don't want to push that forward to my kids.
Exactly. You want to show them this is how you love yourself via this is how I love you.
Yes.
Because the thing you said earlier about doing everything in order to gain love from people yes. that you wanted love from, and then as adults, you figure out that somehow you need to be able to give that love to yourself.
Yes.
And that enables you to go out and meet the world in a different way.
Yes.
Because you feel like you don't have a hole in you that people need to fill up all the time. Mm. So you're addicted almost to their responses towards you, right?
Yeah.
And that's the best thing I feel that you can do for your kids, because they do what we do, not what we say. Yeah.
And also say that you're not so, perfect. You know, yeah. If my mom and dad had said, we have problems.
Exactly, they were open.
Yeah, own the problem. Say, your father is an alcoholic. It's a disease. So we have to work with that. And he could have said to me, I'm sorry I was angry last night. It's the fucking drinking. Oh. He couldn't show himself vulnerable. Yeah. He wanted to be the strong man. Because I know everything about his upbringing. Mm. So he was just copying a pattern. Yeah. And I don't want to copy a pattern. I want to learn from the things I went through. So I don't copy. Because I know as a parent that I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to do a lot of mistakes. But I can say I'm sorry. I can say to my kid, I'm not perfect, because then my daughters will know that you can't be perfect.
And also saying that you know everything. That is a generational thing. The parent is supposed to know and supposed to provide like full on the truth, which is where I think we go wrong. To not admit to kids that I don't know.
And also, we live in such an addict world. Mm. Everything. Look at TV. Look at everything. I'm a bit scared of that, because we're kind of killing ourselves. It's like you have to be so good. You have to be successful.
It's all about our presentation.
It's scary. It's scary for kids, I feel.
I agree. And that brings us to our third story perfectly, I think, because it's about when you were a young, very young kid. Yeah. So let's listen to that.
His five-year-old face is beaming. He is so happy as he approaches the big house where he lives with his mother, father, and older brother. He can't wait to show his mum what he has gotten to take home from preschool over the summer break. He can't believe it. He has gotten to borrow his favorite dress, and he's wearing it proudly. The Snow White dress. It looks just like in the movie Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. A bright yellow flowing skirt, a blue bodice, and short puffer sleeves in red and blue. It is so fun and colourful, and he's been wearing it as often as he can when he's been at school. He loves the way it feels. Now, it's his for the whole summer. He spots his mother through the kitchen window. In a matter of seconds, you will see him. Look! Look at me! He waves as she looks up. Instantly, her calm face changes, and before he reacts, she has run out to meet him and yells, "Don't ever dress like that so your father sees you. You can never, ever wear something like that. Do you hear me?" He is completely stunned.
Yeah, it gets me quite emotional hearing that, Peter.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting with that story, because it came up 2 years later when I got home from rehab. I met my aunt on my father's side, because I needed to talk about my father, about his upbringing. And then we talked about my half-brothers. I had one who is dead. And his name was Göran, and he tried to kill himself the same year I was born. And my mother and father always told me that he had a girlfriend and that she broke up with him and he didn't want to live. And then when my father died when I was 22, I found out that he was gay. Mm. And then when I was sitting with her when I was the age of 38, she told me, no, Göran, he wanted to be a girl. He was dressed in dresses. And when they found him on the floor, he was trying to gas himself, you know, that old gas oven. And he crawled out to the door and was trying to survive, but died. And then my father found him. And when they were looking in his apartment, half of his wardrobe was male clothing and the other one was women. So the story was that he was together with a man who liked him as a woman that had said to him one morning that, I'm sorry, I can't be with you anymore because I want to be with a real woman and have kids. This is 1971. But they didn't want to tell me that because I think they saw I was a bit girly. So the reason why my mom said that was she didn't want my father to see it because then probably I would go the same destiny. But that was not my interpretation of that. My interpretation was that everything that is different, you should keep away from dad or keep as a secret. Course. And I think if my mom had and my father had told me about him, told me that there are men who likes men or women who likes women, I probably would have told them when I was 13 years old that there's a man at my theater who is like Göran, who likes to touch me.
Yes, yeah.
But they taught me that everything that is different, you should hide. Don't show your dad. So I think
that's dangerous.
Yeah, so she was trying to help my dad. Another thing I want to say about being seen and to start an addiction is that, like, when I was 5 years old, I found out that I could sing. So I had learned this Swedish folk song called Värmlandsvisan. So I sang this song in front of the whole family and everyone was like, you're amazing, you're fantastic. So the only thing I thought about after that, I have to sing. I feel like that's when the addictive side of me started, because I wanted to be noticed. And it's the same thing with the abuse. You know, I wanted him to like me. And also the first time I tried drugs was with the model guy who accidentally, a friend of his introduced me to it. And then I was like, yeah, I can do it. Why not? And I did it. I had the best time of my life. And then my boyfriend said, I really like you when you did this. Now we are really close. So the first thing I say to him, I can do it again because I wanted him to like me.
Yeah,
there we
go. It's
again,
the pattern. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I can be good. You know, can you sing the high notes, Peter? It's really hard. I can do it. So after 35, for me, it was like, what do I want to do? Do I want to sing that song? Do I want to do... Everything changed for me. It's amazing because I actually had the power of my own life.
I'm quite curious. So when you had that realization, okay, what do I want to do? And then you started doing that. Was there a part of you that then got anxious? That old voice saying, well, if you do that, nobody will like you. Because I think that holds many people back. Like the old pattern calling you, in a sense.
I think I had been waiting so long to get out of that. So it was the perfect timing for me. It was like, I can't do this anymore. But the only thing that was interesting was that when I had to list all my shame and guilt, you know, on a whiteboard and talk and tell everybody about it in the group. And then they said, you don't have to do this anymore because you're grown up. I was like, oh my God, what a release. But at the same time, I was like, what a big responsibility. I haven't taken responsibility for what my actions sometimes, because I always felt like I had a bad childhood. From that moment, it was like, I have to take responsibility for my own life. And that gave me so much power. Everything with my story is like, everything has been in the right time. It's the right timing all the time. You know, I was so ready for a change. Of course, with addictions and stuff, they've always been like, maybe you should do that. That's what you struggle with. Mm. But that's like 16 years ago now. So I'm fine now. But it's a work.
It's continuous work, isn't it? Yeah. Like coming home to yourself every day
and
reminding yourself. That's why we do this podcast. And we come back to that over and over again. Because I think... And we both think that this is what we need each other to remind each other of. That, like... Yeah, we know so much maybe now if we've become aware and we know what our patterns are, but we easily forget when we get stressed or when things happen. And it is easier said than done to apply what you know. So I think this is the beautiful thing about hearing other people's stories and sharing that you get reminded of how we are so imperfect as human beings. And that's all right. That's being human. That's just what I took away so much from your whole story, that it really is about self-compassion, and that it like comes to you in stages.
Yeah.
How you can't even take it in as a person if it would come all at once either. How could you?
But also, I had so much anger inside of me, you know, that was also, there was a lot of grief. Grief has different stages, and I jumped over the anger. So I forgived people. I forgive my parents. But what I need to do was to be angry. So I did this exercise at rehab when I had to hit a pillow.
Yeah.
You know, why weren't you there for me, to my father? And I was like, it was like, never ending. You know, I was sitting for half an hour. And they just like, push harder, push harder. And then I remember that final hit. I was like, why weren't you there for me? Boom, boom, exploded.
Yeah.
And I was crying. And I was like, everything came out.
Because this is the thing. Like, the body holds what the mind buries.
Yes.
And it is so amazing every time you discover that or see that in somebody else. It's a great reminder.
And also forgive yourself. You know, I feel like for me, it was like the last thing I did on rehab, they said, is this someone else you want to be angry with? And I was like, no, I don't know. Maybe you have to talk to yourself, like your child self, and forgive him. And also to learn to embrace my story, because I had this saying that I have to embrace my story and put it on the head as a crown.
Yeah,
you know, carry it as a crown, because it's me. All the good things, the bad things, it's me. This is what made me. And also pay forward, talk about it and be open. I don't talk about it because I want people to feel sorry about me. I want people to reflect and maybe that I recognize myself in that story, and maybe I should work on that.
To mirror themselves in your story. Yeah. I think that's what we do when we share our stories.
Yeah.
We mirror each other.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is another one that happened at rehab, when there was this woman from England who lived in Denmark who was talking so much all the time, you know, when we were sitting, and she was blah, 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 blah. And the first 2 weeks I didn't say so much because I was so scared, and they were waiting for me to open up. And then she for an hour talked about herself, and then the leader looked at me and said, I see that you look a little bit irritated, Peter. Is it something you want to tell her when you hear the story? And I was like, bah, 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 and had, you know, millions of things. And the whole group was like, finally, you know, he opened up. And then he said, you know, you said so many good things, but do you know what I want you to do now? It's to put up a mirror in front of you and say exactly the same thing that you told her to yourself, because I think you solved your problem.
You just get irritated with her because it reflects your own things.
It's so common, you know?
Oh, it's
and blame
so
other people for your own shit, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that I use every day when I get angry with someone, or if I, you know, Oscar, I get irritated on Oscar. I look at, it's just, before I say something, turn the mirror to myself and say the same things that I want. Maybe it's something about me.
So that's a good practice to do every day.
It's a good one.
I like that one.
There's a couple therapy method called Imago. It originated in the States. And I have taken one of those courses together with my partner. And we absolutely love it because what's so beautiful is that it's always 90% about you, yourself. And then there's like circumstance and everything. That's 10%. But to own that and say, what can I explore about myself when you are actually having an argument? What is it like? It doesn't have to be an argument. It's just that you, what is it that I can see about myself here?
That is sustainability right there. That's, within yourself, within the world, and within relationships.
Yeah.
I have another thing also with parents, because I feel like a lot of people, they are angry with their parents. I put so much energy on hating my father, you know. And when I found out his story, I could feel more love to him because I know he had gone through a lot of things. And then someone told me, said to me, rehab also, he said, there is an expiration date for blaming everything on your parents. It's like, come on, you're grown up now. You know, and also, you can pick the best from your parents. My mom was a singer, an actor. I take that from my mom, and she was kind. My father was an entrepreneur. He was amazing. You know, he did a lot of things. I can take that from him. Focus on that, and that's me. Because I'm always going to be half my mom, half my dad. I love them so much because I know they did the best they could. And I think when I were able to be angry with my parents, all the love came back. It was like a black and white movie that suddenly became colorful. It's a decision you can do as a grown-up. I can decide to bring in the light again.
Feeling that love again, letting the light in, sometimes means that you need to go through the darkness and that those moments of very, very uncomfortable feelings. And then if you go through that, then you can get to the point where you're like, okay, expiration date.
Today I'm so thankful for all those dark times in my life. And also, I've been doing lots of musical theater and a lot of music. I want to do more acting, and I know I'm ready for it because when I did all this therapy and I've met all these people in these rooms, I know what it's all about. It doesn't matter who you are. We were sitting in a circle and we had all masks on. Mask by mask fell off and we were suddenly kids. I want someone to love me for who I am.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. That's why I'm so excited about acting.
It's the exploring the layers of how we actually, I guess you'd say, layer ourselves.
Yeah.
So in such a complicated way, when it comes down to the same needs, always. I've been thinking about how, for myself, it's been amazing being in this business that we're all in, which is about emotions and making people feel. So we go out on the stage or in front of a camera and we feel all these things. But then we can be so lost outside of that. I think that's quite amazing. And it's also why I want to bring that up for anyone listening, no matter what you work with and do in your life. It's like, this is where we are complex as human beings.
Yes.
Because if we don't own our story, go into what we are about, then we won't be able to feel ourselves and authentic emotions in that way.
I lived on stage. I had a life. It was when I was on stage. Then the extra was like when I was sleeping. And what's changed for me now is that I have a life and then I have a job that I love very much. But I have a life. I have my kids.
Yes.
I have my husband. I have my garden. I have my friends. But I also have work, my job, that means so much to me. But it's not my life. But it was my life before. In my book, I talk about when I did cabaret in Stockholm. We took it to Stockholm and played it at Tirol. And my manager had promised me, and there was also one of those moments when I knew something was wrong with me, had promised me that I would be on the front side of DN, Dagens Nyheter, the culture.
Culture section, which would be the equivalent of New York Times or something,
like
the biggest newspaper in Sweden.
And she promised me, that's if you do this interview, it's going to be on the front. So I do the interview, a long interview. I've been out all night. We live in the same house. I live on the attic and my manager lived two floors down. I come home on the Sunday morning and find the paper, open it up, and I'm not on the front page of that. So I go down. Mm-hmm. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. Call on her door. She opens up and I go, I'm not on the front side of the DN Kultur. What's your problem? And she goes like, Peter, who are you? Do you think that the world is like circulated, like you in the center and then the sun, planets and everything? It's 7 o'clock a.m. in the morning. It's like, I'm sleeping. Fuck off. And then she's closed the door. I was so self-centered. And that's because so many things happened to me. You know, when you grow up, when you're a kid, when if you fall, your parents pick you up. Or if something happened, there's always someone take care of you. And then maybe something happens. For me, abuse. And no one picks you up. So you start climbing the ladder. And you don't want to let go of the ladder because you don't think anyone will catch you. So you climb. And even people are standing, on, like you said, on the side. We are here. We can help. You don't trust. So that's what happened to me when I came to rehab, was that they said, you have to let go of the ladder because we are here. That's why you do those exercises to fall in someone's arm. They feel silly, but they're so good. So that's something that you, for an advice, is to practice the rest of your adult life, to dare to fall, to do those exercises, because it's so important to feel that with your partner. That's just, it might be silly, but it's quite sexy to do. You might fall in my arms. I will pick you up.
But you need to convince your body and brain and mind that it's possible, right? So you've got a lot of experience that it wasn't possible and that nobody catched you when you were younger. Yeah. And now you need to convince your body otherwise and your mind and your emotions.
A lot of people are experienced that.
In different ways, absolutely.
And sometimes you don't know that you have a problem as well. I didn't know I had a problem until I was 35. I thought it was like, this is my life. I work hard. I just don't sleep. I do this, blah, 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 blah. But I had a choice. I don't have to do it. I thought I had to deliver. I thought I had to be good. I thought I have to be the best. My next album had to be a hit because I had been so successful.
Yeah, that makes me think of the ending of your beautiful book. There's a story there that is in the beginning of the book too, about you as your, I think, your 10-year-old self.
Yeah.
You were interviewed for a newspaper.
A lot of us was in that musical, Sound of Music. And so they were interviewing us, the kids. So the interviewer said to us, what do you want to do in the future? And everybody said, like, I want to be a pop star. I want to be on Broadway. I want to be a movie star in Hollywood. And finally, they turned to me, this little round man in the corner, and said, what's your goals? I want to peak when I'm 50. That's what I said. I said,
you want to peak when you're 50? Yeah.
Why am I saying that? So in the book, I was like, what did I mean with that?
Yeah, because in the book, I just have to describe it because it's so beautiful. You're saying,
I turned 50 last year. That's why.
And you're like, if I would look at that 10-year-old boy now, I would say, I'm at my peak because I have never been more grounded in my life than I am now.
Oh, that makes me cry.
I mean, it makes me cry because it's everything.
It's so true. When I talk about things that I've gone through, I get so emotional because I worked so hard on figuring out things. I'm fucking grounded.
That is fucking well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
No, but it is fucking well done. Well done. That's where we get emotional. Well done. Because you've gone through so much to be who you are today.
Being gay, though, when I was signed with the same with Ricky Martin. It was me, Ricky Martin, and another guy. We were traveling around the world. And I knew he was gay. People were talking about us. It was still that age of when you were not allowed to talk about it because it could be something. If you were a heartthrob or if girls liked you, you shouldn't tell them you were gay. And to keep that as a secret for so long, it's so hard. People were hunting me, trying to figure out, you know, every interview I did was like, oh, you're doing a new album. Can you talk about the music? And it always ended like, I have another question the paper wants to ask. It's, do you like men or women? And I said, I don't want to talk about that. The only thing they want to know was if I was sleeping with a man or a woman.
Yeah.
And that's abuse as well. I came out on TV. I did it. I've done so many things. I've told my story. I've told I was abused. I've done it. I own my story. That's what I want to inspire other people to do, to own your story, whatever it is, and put it on the fucking head and just go out and shine. Encourage people to do it.
And that's what you're doing today. Yes. But it does require so much bravery and your vulnerability is I mean, I'm through the computer in another country and I feel you.
Oh, good. Mm.
But that's something to be said, because it's so important that we get to that point of sharing, that people can feel us and not only hear us. And that's what you're doing, and that's why we're doing this podcast.
Yes.
This is exactly it.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
It truly
so
is.
So thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
For sharing like this. Thank you for being so brave.
I feel so honored. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
What can I say? I mean, he is one of those people that just gets under your skin in the most positive and life-affirming way. I mean, just listening to him tell these mind-blowing tales from his life in such a beautiful and gracious way is inspiring, right?
Mm, it really is.
He truly is a man of many gifts.
And I'm so glad how this new chapter of his career will allow for his storytelling talent as an actor and creator, because he's focusing more on that now and has various films and TV projects coming up. So I can't wait to see what he does. Mm. This has truly been an inspiring episode to make, and I wish so much love, light, and success for this man.
Me too. If I'd have to use one word when I think of Peter, I'd say courageous. Mm. I mean, he is brave enough to show up as his full self, and that in turn makes so many people see themselves.
Yeah. And can I just be the one to finish up with a quote?
Oh, yes, please. By all means.
So it's by Maya Angelou, and it goes like this. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside. Mm. End of quote. Because that story is your own, right? If you don't, you'll go through your life and you'll live someone else's story. You need to own your story.
That's exactly it. Let's wear our stories like crowns on our heads.
Yes, amen. Okay, if you want to learn more about our guest, please visit cominghomepodcast.com. Here you can also find the link to Peter's book in Swedish and deep dive into some topics we have touched upon today.
We are so incredibly fortunate to have a great team helping us making Coming Home. The editing and sound mixing of this episode is made by Rahmatullah Sheikh, with help from Christopher Örtegren, who has edited and sound designed our stories this time around. Our theme music is made by Caroline Ljungström, and our website is designed by Seth and Östen Communication Bureau.
And Tweak Sweets, our great partner, also gets a shout out of gratitude. They make candy that are filled with fibers and have 95% less sugar than regular candy, all with natural flavors and colors. So please go to their website, tweaksweets.com, and use the code COMINGHOME20 to get 20% off a whole purchase.
We truly appreciate all the feedback we get from you, and we simply cannot do this without you. So if you want to be a part of building this community and letting more people into the conversation, be sure to rate and review and follow the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to Coming Home with me, Laura Back.
And me, Sandra Andres. And since it is June and the month of celebrating Pride and the LGBTQ community, who are sadly under attack in most parts of the world, these days we say love is love. Make sure you love whomever you want and who you are fully and freely, and support others to do the same. Take care, stay passionate, and
be kind to yourselves till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.